Welcome to CKLN.
Hello. Glad to be here.
You note that zaitun is the Arabic word for olive, and you say that the olive expresses the essence of Palestine. Can you start by telling us what you mean by that and about the role of the olive tree in Palestinian culture?
Yes. The olive is, and the olive tree is the, I guess, the single most characteristic tree that you will see, you know, when you survey the land. Although the Palestine is a very fertile land and all kinds of fruits and vegetables grow there, the olive tree is traditionally the mainstay of the agricultural society. And it goes back, you know, eons. And the olive tree has come to symbolize the land and people's attachment to the land and their rootedness in the land. And that's why zaitun is in Canada to not only help the farmers by giving them fair trade prices for their produce, in this case olive oil, because their domestic markets have basically collapsed. And they need support to maintain their agricultural livelihoods, which are becoming more and more tenuous as olive trees and olive groves are being destroyed, either intentionally for the building of the wall or for settler roads and so on.
Can you give our listeners an idea of the scale of the destruction of the olive groves?
Well, I mean, it's. I don't know a specific number, but it just seems the cumulative effect over the last 5 years since the Second Intifada and this incredible, you know, global war on terrorism, so to speak, which obviously seems to include Palestinians, I would say the cumulative effect is probably close to 1 million olive trees that have been destroyed. And if they haven't been destroyed, they have been made inaccessible to Palestinian farmers. So, for instance, the wall itself is very strategically routed between villages and the olive groves so that the people from the village can actually not tend to the olive trees. And although the olive trees may not be, you know, let's say destroyed, for all intents and purposes, they're out of bounds. Even if there's a fence in this sort of so-called fence, whether it's a fence or a wall, and it is both of these in different places, and they've made, the Israeli authorities have made assurances that there'd be access, well, that gate is not very regularly attended to by the Israeli soldiers. They might be there on Wednesday, but not on Thursday. They might be there in the afternoon or in the morning the next day. And in some cases, they insist on only the owner, the official owner of the orchard, to be there, to go tend. And that owner might be the grandfather in his 70s or 80s, and the children and the grandchildren can't accompany the grandfather to tend the olive trees. So essentially what you have there are olive trees that are, through lack of cultivation and lack of attention, are becoming non-productive. And the other part of the systematic destruction is that under an old Ottoman sort of law that has not been repealed by the State of Israel, if farmland has not been cultivated for, I believe it is 3 years, it is then reverted back to the state. So not only is this land or the trees not cultivated, but the land is actually forfeited to the state after 3 years. So the cumulative effect of all these things have greatly, greatly endangered not just the life of individual farmers, but has really knocked the feet out of an economy that's largely agriculturally based.
And what is the market for olive oil traditionally for the Palestinian farmers?
Well, it's traditionally, it's not an export product. I mean, I think in the past it was largely for home consumption or home market consumption. I think it's just that the prices there have become so depressed that the olive oil cannot be sold for any meaningful sum of money. And so there is no opportunity for currency to spend on other things. So I think you have families now who are necessarily surviving on olives and olive oil and something called za'atar, which is an oregano kind of sesame seed mix, which is eaten with olive oil. And it's wonderful. It tastes great. And, you know, olives are very healthy. But I don't think anybody can survive strictly on a diet of olives and olive oil and bread.
What are some of the barriers that Palestinians face in their sort of day-to-day business operation? As you point out, learning about a business like this helps one to understand, to see concretely the
right.
day-to-day effects yeah. of a military occupation.
Right. Well, that's exactly why one of the reasons why Zatoun sort of came about. I mean, Zatoun, first of all, is a registered nonprofit organization. All the proceeds, and when I say all, I mean 100% of the proceeds, go back to fund educational functions, such as there's a project called Project Hope, which is run actually by a group that originated in Toronto, and they run art, drama, computer, English as a second language courses in the city of Annapolis. And also we donate $1 from every bottle sold to planting new olive trees in occupied Palestine. So that's the tangible benefits of selling olive oil in Canada. But also the olive oil has a function of raising consciousness in Canada for the struggles of the farmer and Palestinian society. And so just give you an example of the barriers that we're talking about. For the olive oil to actually, you know, go from the farmer to a port of exit where it's exported, it has to pass through checkpoints. And checkpoints are not sort of border crossings like you and I know where you show your identity card or your passport and you pass through. A checkpoint in Palestine that is manned by Israeli soldiers is basically an impassable set of concrete blocks weighing tons. And what happens there is the shipment of olive oil is in trucks. They back up onto those blocks. They literally have to unload all those containers, and it could be many, many tons of containers, and these containers weigh about 35 pounds. So we're looking at hundreds, if not thousands, of these containers being unloaded by hand, walked over this wall or barrier, and loaded onto another truck that takes it from that point to the next barrier. So can you imagine trying to have an economy or a business where these are the hurdles you have to overcome? Think of you know, our trucks that we see on the 401 all the time. Could you imagine if they every 5 miles or 6 miles they had to stop and unload by hand onto another truck and keep going? They'd never get to Kingston at that rate. And that's the kind of problems that the Palestinian farmers face. And really, it's incredible that they actually manage to live. It's really incredible. But thankfully they do, and thankfully we do have olive oil to sell. And I can tell you most assuredly from what I've heard from many people in Canada, and we've sold from coast to coast to about, we've touched, I'd say, about 10,000 people with the sale of this olive oil. And they've just come back and said, thank you for bringing this to Canada. We didn't know how we could help the situation, how we could support the farmers of Palestine, and you've given us an opportunity to do that, and we're very, very thankful. And so that's very, very heartwarming. Just makes me feel wonderful that we can both make the Palestinian farmers a bit of money so that they can live on, and that we can help sort of educational programs, planting new trees, and then giving Canadians a sense of doing something. Because I think Canadians are looking for avenues to do just that.
And where can people get this olive oil? How are you distributing it?
Well, the way we have it right now is it's really a social network. People who sell it are generally activists or students or unionists, and it's mostly sold to their membership, or it's sold at events, screenings, lectures, workshops, seminars, and also through churches. We have a great number of churches who are strong supporters, and particularly the United Church of Canada in the South Toronto Conference and the Hamilton Conference have been extremely supportive, and as have the Quakers and some of the Presbyterian churches. And also, I have to say this, a great, great many of the supporters and buyers of the olive oil are Canadian Jews, not just in Toronto, but in Montreal and in Vancouver and Halifax, who strongly believe in the need to support, you know, the Palestinian farmers. And they're among the strongest supporters of Zaytoun. And in fact, not just the supporters, but workers. The last shipment that we had was, it arrived just before Christmas, December 13th, and we were busily packaging and bottling and everything. And 90% of the people who were there, it was about 17 of us, happened to be Jewish, which was, I thought, an incredible, incredible thing.
How did you personally get involved with this project?
Well, I am Palestinian myself. My parents immigrated to Canada when I was young, and I haven't really been active in the community in any way. But a couple of years ago, I started thinking about, you know, what can I do, given that I've lived in Canada, have been educated in a very Western kind of mode. I graduated in political philosophy, most of it, you know, Western political philosophy, and I work in marketing and business communication. And I was just, you know, was looking for a way where I could take my experiences and contribute to what I obviously felt very strongly about. So I started looking around for how best could I make a contribution. And it's always been my position that there will one day be a Palestine, a state of Palestine. I don't quite know the final configuration, but whatever it is, it will need to be supported. It will have to have links to the outside world if it's going to be sustainable and viable. And so my thinking was to look to agricultural products, particularly olives, and start creating some of those links. And so our first order of olive oil and our first shipment that we sold actually happened exactly 1 year ago. It was in April 2004 that we had a pilot run of 1,500 bottles, and they literally sold in a little under 4 weeks. So when May rolled around, we were done, and then we were very encouraged by that. And at that point, we incorporated. We became a nonprofit organization and with a board of directors. And we put in an order for a second shipment, which, you know, was quite a hellish experience, importing, going through production and customs and so on. And it didn't arrive until December 13th. We didn't have bottles until December 13th. We're, you know, as you can imagine, quite nervous about that because a lot of it was really geared for the Christmas season because they make perfect gifts. I mean, that's people will buy cases of 12 and literally give out, you know, the whole case as a gift rather than a bottle of wine or something else. It's this gift. And in fact, the label says, you know, very, very clearly, a gift from the land and sky of Palestine, a gift of peace. And that's what it's meant to be. And I think a lot of people have picked it up that way. And it's just a wonderful feeling.
Last question, Robert. For me, the term fair trade is usually associated with coffee or chocolate, sometimes sugar. I mean, I could be ignorant, but that's what I associate with the term, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, how did you get connected to the fair trade movement or the fair trade sector?
Well, I mean, you're absolutely right in that fair trade at this time is actually limited to only a number of commodities. And the ones you named are the ones, coffee, sugar, cocoa. Now, for instance, in olive oil, the standards are called FLO, which I believe stands for the Fair Trade Labeling Organization. And that's the main worldwide organization that actually sets the standards and does the certifying and so on. And they haven't developed standards for olive oil, as they haven't for a lot of other commodity goods. And so formally, this is not certified fair trade. When I say fair trade, it's that we're buying the olive oil from farmer collectives in Palestine who operate according to fair trade guidelines, just from the standpoint of how they deal with each other, how they deal within the collective, how they grow their olives, how they press them, how they store them. So very clear guidelines, and also how they conduct the business of around exporting the olive oil. So, for instance, when we buy the olive oil, we're paying for it up front, which is one of the requirements of fair trade. And this is so that the farmer actually, you know, gets the funds that they need to support themselves, not 3 months or 6 months after they've actually delivered their product. And so what that does is it puts severe pressure on an organization like Zetoun. We're constantly faced with a situation where we have to generate some income, some funding to bridge to the next purchase. So it's a very, very challenging model that we've chosen to work with, but we believe it's a good model. It's the model that has to be, because it maximizes the benefit to the farmer. And we also believe that we are appealing to the conscientious groups in society who not only support, you know, a just peace in Palestine, but also support fair trade. And so that's why we say fair trade, and that's how we conduct our fair trade.